Shiva was capable of bestowing bhakti to Lord Vishnu. They worshipped with devotion, using many articles of worship. The word cha indicates that they similarly worshipped Ambika. O king, being a king, you can understand the curious actions of persons who are curious. The Lord protects the worship performed by the devotees for the purpose of devotion to the Lord, as the king protects citizens. Text 3. The cowherd men gave the brahmanas gifts of cows, gold, clothing, and cooked grains mixed with honey. Then the cowherds prayed, quote, "May the Lord be pleased with us." Vishwanath writes, "Nanda and the others gave cows, gold, the remnants of honey from the bathing of Shiva, and rice sprinkled with honey to the brahmanas." Jiva Goswami writes, these two verses describe how they were eagerly engaged in dharma and artha. Now, if you're a Brijvasi, are you going to follow Varnashram and do the dharma for the sake of artha and all that? Well, they follow, but they're on the spontaneous platform. And so their purposes are different than those that follow for other purposes. Like this Sanatan Dharma discussion from yesterday evening. They follow. Follow codices. They follow. They were respected by the priests of the temple, or the cowherds were respectful. Nanda, so the Sanskrit word is adrita. Nanda and others individually gave gifts. They requested that Shiva and Vishnu be pleased, since Vaishnavas want to please the Lord and his devotees. They prayed for worshipping Vishnu and for the nourishment of Krishna. Sanatana Goswami. They, the cowherd men, were respected by the priests of the temple and were respectful toward them. Nanda and all others gave gifts to the brahmanas and prayed. They requested that Shiva and Vishnu be pleased, since Vaishnavas want to please the Lord and his devotees. And text 4. Nanda, Sunanda, and the others, the greatly fortunate cowherds, spent that night on the bank of the Saraswati, strictly observing their vows. They fasted, taking only water. And there is a one sentence purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that Sunanda is the younger brother of Nanda Maharaj. There were five brothers. And Nanda was in the middle. Vishwanath. So Nanda was Nanda's younger brother, sipping water and observing vows. They resided in the bank of the river that night. Jiva Goswami, they drank only water because they had taken a vow, Yata Vrata, since it was Shivaratri. So Nanda, the younger brother of Nanda, is mentioned since He was one of the leading figures. This means that, this is an inference, the older brother Upananda remained in Braja protected since he was older in knowledge and years. And Sanatan Goswami writes, they drank only water because they had taken a vow, yatavrata, because it was Shiva's place. They were greatly fortunate, or they were to attain some fortune. Worship of Shiva is proper since he is a devotee of the Lord. Paragraph. Sunanda was the younger brother of Nanda. This means that the older brother Upananda remained in Braja to protect it and give advice. There were other elders there also. The majority were elders, and thus they are described. That's doing this yajna or worship. The boys and Krishna did not fast, since young boys are not fond of vows. Hint. Text 5. During the night, a huge and extremely hungry snake appeared in that thicket, slithering on his belly up to the sleeping Nanda Maharaj. The snake began to swallow him. Vishwanath writes, Mahan, ahi, means boa constrictor. Both the word uraga, or snake, as well as ahi, which also means snake, are used to indicate that he slithered into the forest on his chest, so that he would be unseen by others. Of course, there's probably not too many options for a snake. Jiva Goswami. What happened the next night is described. Some remarkable snake appeared by some good fortune. Yadrichchaya, that's in the Sanskrit. Yadrichchaya. Agata came there. So Yadrichchaya, we'll speak a little bit about Yadrichchaya in a moment. The snake approached on its breast, Uraga, since it did not have feet. Nanda was sleeping soundly because of fatigue from the fast and staying awake the previous night. The snake came to him, because that's part of Vrata procedure, you know, in some technical senses. The snake came to him because Nanda was sleeping in a solitary place to avoid people disturbing him. The snake began swallowing his legs. Sanatan Goswami. No one was awake. That is mentioned later. The snake was actually attempting to be rescued from his condition. The snake was very hungry because it had not eaten for a long time. By some fortune, it came to that forest. Although it lived there by chance, came to Nanda. It began to swallow Nanda by his feet. Quote, seeing the snake, why did Nanda not flee? Answer, he was sleeping because of fatigue from the journey. Question, why was the snake not afraid when he saw Nanda? Answer, Nanda was inactive on the ground, covered by a cloth. And the phrase, by fortune, Yadrichchaya, indicates the chief cause of the event. Colon. With great pain, the snake took shelter of Nanda's feet in order that he be delivered. And Vishwanath writes in another commentary, Mahan Ahi means a boa constrictor. The word Ura Ga means moving on his belly. This is an adjective expressing how the serpent was invisible. Invisible, not in the sense that, you know, he was a ghost or something. Not physically manifest, just because he was moving along the ground. He wasn't visible in ordinary sense. And that's it for our morning verses, 2 through 5. Speak a little bit about Yadrichchaya. It's being translated twice as by fortune and by chance. That's in the word for word. By fortune is the Goswami's translation or meaning, and here it's in the word for word. The BBT is by chance. So what happens by chance? Well, you hear Prabhupada's lectures and you understand there's nothing that happens by chance. That's, you know, it's a modern scientific terminology. When you can't explain something, it's just by chance, an accident, a random event out of the possibilities of all events, and there's no reason, it's just by chance. Another way that the Yadrichchaya is translated is somehow or other, like it's inexplicable. Whether there's a cause or not a cause, who can say? Because if you were to try to identify the cause, you couldn't, and so you just say Yadrichchaya, somehow or other, by chance, by fortune. And something that I learned from studying commentaries on Ramayana, Govindaraj, one of the commentators from the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, explained that the word Yadrichchaya is used only twice in Valmiki Ramayana. And the two times it's used is when Kaikeyi does what Kaikeyi does. And the other is where Shuparnaka does what Shuparnaka does. And otherwise it's not in the whole Ramayana. So he explains that it signifies two things, and that is the reason, the inexplicable reason of why they did what they did was Lord Ramachandra, from within their heart, with the two of them, he inspired them to do what they did. It's just inexplicable. So it's Super Soul, or the Supreme Lord. And second reason is, it both what Kaikeyi did and the other is it was event-changing. And it resulted in a whole flow of events following what each of them did. And two purposes of the personality of Godhead's appearance in this world is Pritranaya Sadhunam Vinashaya Shaduskritam. So what Kaikeyi did was to assist Lord Ramachandra in fulfilling his Kritranaya Sadhunam, giving his association to the sadhus that were in the forest. Because if he just stayed in Nayoja being the king, all of those sages in the forest for 12 and a half years wouldn't have gotten his association. But they wanted. Yesterday morning, reread this little section from Jiva Goswami's commentary on Brahma Samhita, text 56, where the personality of Godhead appears according to, we heard this commentary, the intensity of their meditation upon a particular form of the Lord. And he appears out of his own will. He didn't have to do anything. And just like this other section that we were reading up until yesterday about Krishna showing the residents of Vrindavan Gokula. And our acharyas explain it's not just because they were Shuddha Bhaktas, because otherwise they would be seeing Krishna's Goloka all the time because they're Shuddha Bhaktas. So there's a qualification on one side, become a Shuddha Bhakta, and the qualification on the other side is Krishna decides he wants to show you something. There's this question of effort and mercy again that has been coming up several times. Is mercy sufficient or is effort sufficient? And they're both required, and they're interdependent, yes, but even if one is qualified, like the residents of Vrindavan were qualified, they weren't able to see Goloka, Krishna Loka. But Krishna decided to show, and then he withdrew what he showed. Then some of you may have attended or heard the evening class yesterday. I'm just tying in a few things. So yesterday evening, there was the final prayer of Prahlad in chapter 9, text 50. Hare Krishna. Text 50. And in the purport of text 50, Prabhupada quotes a verse from Katha Upanishad that says, the Supreme Lord cannot be understood by this, that, and the other thing. And there is one way he can be understood, and that's if he chooses to have us understand him. Or he can show himself to one who he chooses to show himself to. And included in the things that are not sufficient to understand or see are things that our Bhagavad Dharma tell us to do. Bahudha Shrutena, extended hearing. I mean, there's so much emphasis on Shravanam and Kirtanam. It's the foundation of Bhagavad Dharma, our Bhakti process, Shravanam Kirtanam, Shravanam Kirtanam, Shravanam Kirtanam. But Bahudha Shrutena is not sufficient. It can make one qualified. It can bring one to the stage of Prema Bhakti. And to understand the Supreme Lord or to see the Supreme Lord, it requires his mercy. He'll show himself to whoever he wants to show himself to. Now, because he's merciful, he'll show, but doesn't mean, you know, he's bound. He's bound by love because he chooses to be bound by love, not because it's a rule. He's not bound by rules. It's part of the big mystery of understanding Krishna. the unlimited supreme, you know, this, you know, these are Aishwarya terminologies, the unlimited, all-powerful, supreme entity that brings creation into being and is our master and our Lord, and all those Aishwarya truths about Krishna. Supposing one understands all those things, one may not see Krishna, one may not fully understand Krishna in his fullness, the Swayam Bhagavan future. Bhagavatam wants us to understand it. It's like giving it to us, but part of giving it to us has these essential understandings. That is, he'll help us understand when he wants to. And we can't, you know, stamp our foot or tap our foot and demand, hurry up. I mean, we can be enthusiastic, that's good. It's required. Be enthusiastic. Be absorbed. And at the same time, mercy. Now, the all-merciful is always merciful, but the heart of the enthusiastic devotee is eager for the mercy, however he wants to bestow it, but eager for the mercy, eager for that sense of connection with the personality of Godhead. So, Yadrishchaya. Why did the serpent do what the serpent did? Well, good fortune, or by chance, or somehow or other. And behind all that is the chance or good fortune is Krishna. Because in the heart of the serpent, there's a spirit soul. In the heart of the spirit soul, there's super soul. And that's Krishna's expansion decided to do what he did. And then we heard the commentaries say, Krishna wanted once again to show his opulence. So he did. That's all, it's all it takes is icha. And then everything flows. His energies start to move because they want some service. And then his lila shakti, used by our acharyas again and again, Lila Shakti has some potencies and things start to happen. And then he moves on to another Lila and another Lila, and it's Nitya Lila. He wants to, and then it happens. So in this case, there's multiple things, not only one thing. So when we say one thing doesn't mean it includes other things. He wanted to show opulence, and with that show of opulence comes astonishment, a secondary rasa, and celebration. Oh, how wonderful is Krishna. We've been hearing sometimes when opulence is shown, the result of that opulence being shown is the sweetness is eclipsed, but other times it strengthens the sweetness. How wonderful is Krishna? Especially for the Brijbasis. And of course, there's another. The serpent, besides being hungry, the serpent wanted to be delivered. Because delivered means he was a serpent because of a curse, which we'll hear shortly. And Krishna wanted to assist this creature and, you know, the soul within that creature to be relieved from a curse of a sage. Krishna is very careful, we hear regularly, that he upholds the word of great devotees. So many examples. Brahma said, Narada said, this one said, that one said. And Krishna makes it come true because he upholds the words of his devotees, just like Ram upholds the word of Dasarath. At all inconvenience, no problem. Such joy. So Krishna likes. It's like knocking over the twin Arjuna trees. It was just to uphold the word of Narada. Krishna would deliver them. So, in the form of trees. So I better get down to business. And that's like immediately after all of this wonderful Leela with Mother Jasoda, where his Ichha Shakti said, his Sarup Shakti said, I don't want to be bound by rope, I want to go get some more butter. This is Vishwanath explaining. She couldn't bind him because he didn't want to be bound. Even your Mother Jasoda, you can't bind Krishna. And it defies logic. Get a million ropes. Jiva Goswami in his commentary says, because she was queen, she had access to the storerooms of all the citizens. So she gathered up gobs and gobs and gobs of rope, not just a few of them, and tied them all together, and it was still 2 inches too short. What a mystery. But she didn't stop because of her motherly affection. And so seeing her motherly affection and her fatigue and perspiration and hairs falling, flowers falling from her hair, Krishna withdrew his Sarup Shakti and extended his Kripa Shakti. There you go. Krishna's mercy extended, then anything could happen. Anything could happen. And without it, nothing happens. That's what happens. Nothing happens. So we're dependent on Krishna's mercy. Good news is he's merciful. And good news is he's moved, not only moved, he's controlled by the pure love of his devotees, like the residents of Braja. So Nanda's, as in the previous, still kidnapped by Varuna, Nanda's in difficulty. In this case, it's not just he was kidnapped, it's like death. And he's calling out. We'll hear shortly. He calls out, Krishna, I'm your father. This little boy, I'm your father. Please protect me. It's totally irrational and totally devotional. And that's the Yadrichchaya. Two more things. I don't know how often all of you in this room get asked the question, the Jiva Fall question. It comes up, and it's in this Yadrichchaya category. And, you know, without going through, people don't like the answer that, you know, that you misuse free will. Why would you misuse free will when it's so nice? And all those kinds of things. And what's the cause of misuse of free will? That's the, as if there's some... So, in the case of the fall of the Jiva, it's not that Krishna chooses his ichha as, go ahead, misuse your free will. Okay, I'll support it. It's another kind of Yadrichchaya. It's simply, you know, the primordial ignorance of ignoring Krishna because living entities have free will. And what's the reason behind it? There's no good reason. You won't find a good reason because there isn't a good reason. But it's the free will of living entity being misused. And then just as another sharing, somebody that's learning to become a teacher, because they're learning to become a teacher, they realize they have to understand the bhakti teachings better than they used to understand the bhakti teachings. So it's good to, you know, begin teaching because you sit straight. You have to be more attentive to detail. And so one of their questions is, are there different locations in Krishna's pastimes where he has his baby pastime and his childhood pastime and his youth pastime and his kishore pastimes, and like he just like moved from this place to that place? You know, how does it work? And there's been this back and forth, and they can't understand why they can't understand. You can't use material, three-dimensional space and time as we know it to understand. But we use our yardsticks from, you know, material understanding to a common mistake. It's like the fall of the jiva. Just, you can't use a material yardstick. You can't. So within Krishna is everything, and Krishna manifests and Krishna withdraws. He can exhibit, just like the prison house of Kamsa. There's the form Vishnu, and then presto, there's a little two-armed baby. Effortless. It didn't take any time, didn't get elastic and then shrink. He just, everything is within him. And he can, so he can manifest pastimes. So it's not like a living entity that grows. Krishna doesn't grow. He's exhibiting different pastimes to reciprocate love with his devotees. And his desire to reciprocate love with his devotees and experience happiness himself, his energies just come and go as at his will. And it's in his Bhoma Leela, it looks like he's growing, in his Nitya Leela. So how does it work in Goloka? Same. According to whoever he's associating with, it's whatever, Nitya Leela. It just moved from one pastime to another pastime to another pastime. And there's no problem, Nitya Leela. It defies our cause and effect and three-dimensional space and time kind of processes. We won't be able to understand that way. Simply within Krishna is everything, and he can manifest and withdraw, no problem. And doing so eternally. There's 55 and 56 verses from Brahma Samhita. One of the statements there is, time does not pass for even a moment. One of the explanations of time, a feature of time as we know it, is time destroys. Time, I am, destroyer of all things. But then there's time, this is our Acharya's explanation, there's time in the spiritual world, but it doesn't destroy anything. It's Nitya Leela and eternal time. So there's time, but it doesn't destroy anything. It's like incomprehensible to our experience, because time moves things. And there's past times, but no time that destroys things. Eternal time and eternal past times. Achintya Shakti, inconceivable potencies, and that's Krishna. And we have to understand these things. Janma karma chame divyam evam yopeti tatvataha chakvadeham purnar janmana. So it's not by mundane logic or, you know, academic prowess. It's not by those. It's by bhakti. Then these inconceivable things become knowable because Krishna discloses them. And we won't be able to understand unless Krishna discloses them. And that's the rules of the game. And we're involved in the game. We're involved in this, the journey of bhakti that takes us to Krishna. And it's a big mystery. It's better than mystery stories. Let's see if there's some discussion in the room, and then we'll go to whatever is online. Yeah.
Maharaj, you said enthusiasm. Mercy, you have to depend on Krishna, but you have to have enthusiasm.
Yeah.
But these three modes are always...
operating.
Yes. So can we pray to Krishna to please remove these three modes?
Yeah.
So I can...
Yeah. Nice going.
Because, yes, Shravanam we want to do, but somehow, sometimes it's like, this mode is so predominating that I just don't want to do it. So, that time the prayers will work, that time Krishna will show mercy to remove that mode? Or?
Well, he can. I'm just adding, I'm editing here, because he will. But he doesn't have to do anything. So he will means he can. He hears your prayer. Supposing he doesn't respond right away, then what? I lose my faith. Or I lose my enthusiasm. He may want to see us have enthusiasm that's not passion. It's, you know, not even goodness. He may want that kind of enthusiasm from us. So he, you know, he looks the other way. Apparently. He doesn't like jump when we say jump. It has his own way of doing things. But so with faith, then we persevere. Your question is very similar to Devahuti's question. You're blocking your mother. You got to move. In the beginning of the discussion with Kapila Dev, she asked this kind of question, and then she asked it again because it's an important question. It's a real obstacle. Is the grip that the modes of nature have on us, and part of the reason. The modes of material nature have a grip upon us. Well, it's, you know, we're habituated to them, but we're holding on to them. Although we may be calling out, Krishna, please remove them, we're holding on to them at the same time. It's like very strong. And anyone who tries will recognize how strong. And you recognize you need help. You can't do it on your own. So, yes, the answer to your question. And, you know, just continue to persevere because the nature of bhakti is it can dissolve that. And there isn't something else. Not a long menu.
I have the Jiva Goswami's comment on that intensity, the fix your mind and...
Yes.
So I was just thinking, it's like Rama, like Hanuman, when he opens his heart and shows Rama.
Yeah.
So I was just trying to link that. So it's
yes.
Because of his... Okay. So, and I was just connecting with one song, Mama Mana Mandire, come and sit in my heart. But Lord is, as Paramatma, in the four-handed form.
Yes.
So that is removed and then you have your desire...
Yes, that's bhakti. Premanjana charity bhakti vadochanena Santaksadaya-pravedayosha-pradiyesha-vayogina-shyam-shyam-asundaram. For a devotee, that's what they see. But he shows the form according to their intensity of devotion, or their intensity of meditation. That was the commentary specifically. So upon whom are we meditating? And that's going to be what our experience is. I mean, as bhakti matures. Okay? You have something?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So if you are not on a spontaneous love, like Nanda Maharaj was, the practice of varnashram dharma for artha, kama, moksha, and liberation, is that on a material plane?
It's mixed. It's mixed. Or using the language of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Ramananda Roy, it's external. Bhakti is there for the Daivi Varnashram folks. But those that aren't on that on that higher platform, it's a means to get something.
Mm.
So Krishna is there and the material is there.
So in order to achieve the love of the Lord, you have to get above the Varnashram Dharma, is that right?
Well, but yes and no. Above, but not above. Above in the sense that it's not a means to get something. But not above because you continue to perform. It's part of the program of cheaters to say I'm above.
Mm.
You follow?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else in the room? Yes?
When Nanda Maharaj called for Krishna, when he was in trouble, did he call like a Jamil called for Narayan, or did he call as a Krishna as a Supreme Personality of Godhead?
Well, he didn't, neither. Because how Ajamila called was, my son. And how Nanda Maharaj called was with affection, with knowledge. I mean, Ajamila wasn't thinking other than in material consciousness, let's say it this way, his consciousness was materially based.
Mm-hmm.
He was very sinful, and as a sinful man is attached to objects of this world, it was that kind of attachment. And Nanda's attachment wasn't that same kind of attachment. It was the pure prema attachment. In the mood of a father to his son, in a transcendental mood. Okay?
Yeah.
Yes?
This is one of the devotees in the Bhakti Ruksha. She has this question. I have a lot of enthusiasm in reading, and I get so much pleasure when I read and I can connect to Krishna, but the same thing is not happening with chanting.
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay I read more and I chant less?
Read more and chant the same.
My mind wanders when I'm reading,
it's okay.
But my chant, when I listen, I can connect to, I'm in that.
Okay, so here it's a simple principle. That is, that which assists in our connection, gives us enthusiasm and all those nice things, do it abundantly. Make the Krishna connection strong. And then you borrow from that strength and place it over here where it may not be so strong. So don't diminish, but borrow strength from. And be patient. Because hearing, it has a similar effect. It's also cleansing like Chaitadarpa Namarjana from chanting. It's cleansing. So do more cleansing and attraction to Krishna activity that works for you. And go back to the foundation that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave to us, and the scriptures indicate primarily the name. So the two go well together. Supposing it's the other way around. Somebody likes the name and they don't really like study. So do lots of name chanting and study. Anything else? Okay.
First question is from Prakash Narayan Govindan. He asks, the time between when eventually Krishna discloses the inconceivable parts of transcendental knowledge to a living entity by his own sweet will, and when we begin following associated spiritual practices we learn from a spiritual master or the scriptures, are we not following blindly because aspects of it is idrikachaya?
Because the aspect is what?
Because aspects of it is, I don't know what, idrikachaya.
Yadrikachaya.
Idrikachaya, okay.
No, it's faith. I mean, in simple language. And faith with reason. Those of you who are disciples of Tamal Krishnamurti know that book that he wrote, Faith and Reason. And it's for scholars. But, you know, it's a classic false dichotomy that, you know, which comes first. So, and scholars, you know, talk about it a lot or write about it a lot. And so Tamal Krishnamurti took that topic. But it's they go together. So we practice with the faith that it'll take us to where we want to go. And there's reasoned investment in that faith. We don't trash reason. But reason isn't going to get you to the goal. Reason is something that it gets some strength provided it connects one to the goal. So we have faith in the bhakti process, or faith in Srila Prabhupada, or faith in scripture, or, you know, there has to be some preliminary faith. And then from that, sadhu sangha, then bhajana kriya, and then anartha vritti, and so forth. But there has to be some faith. Otherwise, you know, we're out to lunch. So it doesn't have to be blind faith. But it's not, you know, somehow or other. It's Krishna's mercy is coming into our lives through the association of devotees, because Krishna instructs his devotees, distribute my knowledge of me, remind people of what they have forgotten. And so his devotees do that, knowing that's Krishna's desire. And then that's the somehow or other. The mercy of the devotees comes to our life. Because Krishna wants. Okay. Next.
From Amol Bhakti Prabhu. How do we conceive of the happiness experienced in Gokul when our entire experience of happiness is only in duality with sorrow?
Well, you have to hit the pause button. With, you know, what our sense of happiness is. And here, you know, read Prabhupada's books, because again and 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 again until, like, it's okay, I got it. That one's thought of happiness, that's material happiness, is but an illusion. It's only suffering. And again and again and again and again. So the burst the bubble through hearing, and as illusion becomes mitigated, relieved to some degree, then real happiness begins to shine through. It's just like, it's a cloudy day here. And so the brightness of the sun that is shining very brightly, we're not experiencing it because of the cloudy day, the clouds in the sky. And so as the clouds dissipate, then the brightness is stronger. It's a simple metaphor. So the clouds of ignorance, no, the mist of ignorance and the clouds of anartas. That's Bhakti Vinod Thakur's language. So the bhakti process takes away both gradually, and then real happiness, what that is something we can experience.
Next one is from Uttama Bhakta Prabhu. Like Krishna's Ichha Shakti, is our Ichha Shakti also very strong because it rides on the Shakti of Krishna and determines our goals?
Well, it depends if you use your desire potency properly or not. We're tiny samples of Krishna. And as Krishna has Ichha Shakti, we also, that's called our free will. We can make choices. It's very tiny. So, depends on how we make our choices. So if we align our choices with Krishna's choice, the bell rings. And something happens. And then they're supposing it's... But Seva Priya said, you know, we're trying to exercise our free will properly, but there's some obstacles, you know, the modes of nature obstacles, conditioning obstacles. There's proportionate to our alignment of our capacity to choose, aligning with Krishna's choice, then there's a lot of strength.
Question from Archana Vaidya. This is her question from last evening's class.
Yeah, I remember
class.
The question from yesterday. Go ahead, say it.
Can you kindly describe about Kala, Amsha, and Vibhanamsha incarnations?
It's not Kala, it's Kala.
Kala.
Kala is time, and Kala is what she's asking about. Kala, Angsa,
and Vibhanamsha.
And Vibhanamsha. So, this is technical. And Vibhinamsa is that's Krishna's direct expansions. And Angsa is just a fragment, a partial fragment of Krishna's potency. And Kala is consistently used to describe the Vishnu Tattva forms, the Purusha forms, and a portion of a plenary portion. So, is it, I'm just waiting, you know, anticipating our persons that ask questions and then questions upon the questions. There are cases where the Kala terminology and the Vibhinamsa overlap, and there are cases where they're not the same. Huh? So, Kala, let's say it this way, there's not 100% consistency in the use of these terminologies. That's been my experience. So what I'm speaking is the preponderance of cases are where Kala indicates the Purusha avatars, portion of a plenary portion. And there can also be considered Vibhinamsa because they're in that same tattva category, you know, the supreme, as opposed to the living entity, the jiva, or the mam eva angsa, jiva angsa, mam eva angsa, jiva loke, jiva bhuta sanatana. Angsa is a fragmental portion. That's the angsa means, fragmental portion. And angsa can indicate different things depending upon the context. It's a fragmental portion, a tiny expansion. But it's not always indicating a jiva. It can mean different things. Vibhinangsa means that, a plenary expansion, and then the kalas, a portion of a plenary portion. That's Bhaktisiddhanta's language, little dictionary-esque.
And the rest of her question is, and also about the causal and effectual energies with regard to creation.
We'll talk about it tomorrow. I mean, this technical is a little inappropriate. We'll do it tomorrow. Bring it up tomorrow.
And one question from Sucharita Devidasi. Why is the adjective blessed used with the Supreme Personality of Godhead as blessed Lord? The Lord blesses us and gives His mercy, but why is He referred to as blessed Lord?
You understand the question? Our blessed Lord? It is, you know, it's just language. We're not blessing Him. He's blessing us. He is blessed. And He can distribute His blessings, but He's blessed.
Bless the Lord. Blessed. No doubt about that.
Is that all right? I think if I've understood the question that being asked, I think that covers the question. Anything else? That's it. Thank you very much. Prabhupada ki jai.